Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Centre. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the programme tonight, Aditya Thackeray joins me to look at the new rules for travellers into Mumbai. That's being revised. We should have an announcement on that anytime now. Meanwhile, travellers who've been stuck waiting for RT-PCR test results at airports for hours before they can exit as per the new rules because of Omicron, that's the new strain of COVID, join us to share their experiences. And finally, and this is really key, we'll be joined by Professor Salim Abdul Karim. He is a key member of the African COVID Task Force, somebody right in the middle of dealing with the outbreak of Omicron in that country. Just how bad is that? So that's what we're looking at. But first, I spoke to Aditya Thackeray, the senior Maharashtra minister, a little while back on the new travel rules, which have resulted in a fair bit of confusion, particularly for those who are from at-risk nations, from where they're coming to India and would, under the rules which presently exist, have to go through institutional quarantine. Is that about to be changed? Why have you decided to revise many of the guidelines which the Maharashtra government had introduced?
We've just had a meeting in the afternoon to review some certain guidelines that we have issued yesterday. But for us, what comes first and really matters the most is safety of the citizens, be it staying here or traveling to and from our state. If you see what's happening with Omicron in terms of, you know, even the line that I've been reading on NDTV and all the news, the articles that we've been seeing, it is exponentially growing in certain countries. Certain countries have really banned flights to and from the countries. So I think it's about time for us to really wait and watch for the strength of the strain as yet. But the first focus really is to safeguard our citizens. We've just come out of a deadly second wave. We're sort of, you know, the virus is still around and we're just taking precautions. We're being cautious, but for the safety of our citizens.
And what about the high-risk countries? By high-risk, I asked the word high-risk as opposed to at-risk, because at-risk was what the centre actually said. They referred to that. But by high-risk, are you referring to countries in South Africa which have had the maximum impact thus far of Omicron?
Absolutely. You know, there are sources of origin for the strains where it has been found. And in fact, you know, too much of the credit of the doctors that they actually took the efforts to find it. But now it's up to all of us as the world to stand together, take whatever steps are important to control this strain. And, you know, like science mandates, let's wait for the science. Let's wait for WHO to confirm the strength of the strain. As of now, we know that it's growing exponentially in many countries around the world and it's growing multiple times. So that is really a matter of fear for us, because we've just come out, like I said, from a deadly second wave. The Delta, if it is being replaced or not, if the Delta remains, how strong is it in terms of comparison with the Delta? Finally, we do not want people on hospital beds. We do not want people on oxygen. And that's why we're taking necessary precautions to prolong as much as possible in terms of the entry of the Omicron into Maharashtra.
Aditya, a very interesting point over here is that the state government had actually issued guidelines to be implemented from 12 a.m. this morning. In other words, passengers who would actually come in would go into institutional quarantine. But you felt that this was actually unfair on many of these passengers, perhaps 1,000 plus, because there were at least three flights coming in from the United Kingdom. And these passengers wouldn't have known about the rules which have just changed. Is that one of the reasons why you did not implement early this morning?
No, even with our last time's guidelines for the second wave and post-second wave also, every time we've issued a guideline, when it is something like a vessel or flight which is airborne, you obviously cannot implement them because they have flown without prior information. So when they landed, what we ensured is everyone went through an RT-PCR test and basically the BMC and other local bodies, be it Pune, Navi Mumbai, have been informed by the airport authorities, and we'll be tracking them over the next 14 days for any symptoms, and we'll be, of course, checking them with RT-PCR tests and lag flow. So that is the whole protocol that we have sort of issued.
So broadly speaking, the guidelines which will now be in place will be essentially one India, one set of guidelines. Would that be fair to say?
There are certain things that we'll have to probably have in a stricter fashion, because if you see last time also, we were hit first, we were hit the hardest. And in the sense of, you know, even being accountable and transparent, we were always accountable and transparent and have been. So we need to be a little more cautious about our state, because we have a lot of floating population that comes in and goes out, not just in terms of tourism, but in terms of business, commerce. So we need to protect the interest of the state in terms of everyone who comes here for tourism, you know, or trade, commerce, or for whatever reason, to safeguard their safety and the citizens living here. So we're balancing both and the convenience of the people.
But just one important clarification, because this was one of the key points, institutional quarantine for those from at-risk countries. I know that there will be RT-PCR tests at the airport for these at-risk countries. That's already there.
Yes.
And if you clear it, you can leave. But will there be institutional quarantine for these individuals?
That you shall see soon. We have reviewed the guidelines. But like I said, you know, I cannot divulge much out here since it is already in the process. It wouldn't be fair to the officials to divulge much here before they get the okay of the Chief Minister.
I totally understand that. But let's just talk a little bit about then the Omicron situation in Maharashtra. Now, earlier today, there were a number of individuals who were tested. I believe there were travelers who'd come into your state. I think there were six odd of them who were tested for and genetically sequenced, I believe, for the variant of COVID which they may have had. Is there any progress on that? Are there any indicators of Omicron already?
As of now, no. Hopefully, it remains like that. Like I said, you know, there are a couple of factors we're looking into. One is, of course, waiting for the WHO and the relevant authorities, be it the ICMR, to come out with, you know, more information on it after some studies on it. So that is one. The other is, we were really hopeful of opening up our schools from first standard and to the eighth standard, also the, you know, the primaries, pre-primaries, all of it. But we have sort of delayed it by 15 days because we want to sort of safeguard the situation. Now, there was one report where I saw that this strain has actually infected little kids. Now, the demography that will, you know, infect, or whether it's the vaccinated, unvaccinated, to what extent does the vaccination really safeguard from Omicron? I think that is something, of course, we're all waiting for very keenly and very eagerly for the scientists and the doctors to speak out on. And as soon as we have a certain mandate from them, that is how we will, you know, review our guidelines again.
Booster doses. What are your views on this? Because on the one hand, we've got many countries around the world starting out with booster doses. We haven't done that in India. Our priority is to get everybody two doses. But you know what Adar Poonawalla was telling us on NDTV yesterday is that there is no dearth of vaccine availability. So everybody who needs two doses will be given two doses. And everybody who wants to, even if they want to buy a vaccine for a third dose, can go ahead and do that if orders are placed. Is your state government in favor of that, of a booster dose?
Tell you what, in terms of vaccination, now it is going at a good rate. It had dropped a little bit, but right after the news of a new strain, it has increased and people have got back to especially the second dose. So that is very, very important. In terms of the booster, as an administrator, as a politician, even though I have a personal opinion, I wouldn't want to comment on it because, again, we have a task force of doctors and pediatric task force, the senior task force, both speaking, discussing about it, and soon would be speaking on it. However, we just had a review meeting for the city of Mumbai, of which, you know, we're looking into also very closely. And 100% of the first dose and about 72% of the second dose has been covered. We would be writing to the government of India to not change our delivery schedule of the vaccines, but allow us at a shorter gap so that we can at least cover 100% of our population with the second dose. So at least Mumbai and a couple of more cities and many more districts are fully vaccinated by at least mid-January. And that is the real intention, so that we have a certain amount of protection of fully vaccinated people in our state.
Now, this is important. 100% have got their first dose in Mumbai. 72% have got their second dose.
Yes, slightly more than 100% in terms of the floating population that comes in from nearby districts into Mumbai as well, or other states that come into Mumbai. So
they've been vaccinated as well.
Yes.
So that's would Mumbai therefore be number one among the big cities in the country, the metros, in terms of vaccination? 72% second dose?
Second dose, yes. Probably yes. And we're hoping all other cities, you know, are shoulder to shoulder, because we all have to be protected today.
Now, this is great news, Aditya. When do you expect 100% full vaccination for the city of Mumbai, which is one of the largest cities on earth?
If possible, if the gap reduces to about 4 to 5 weeks, and we're going to, you know, also speak to the government of India, we have had informal communications, we could finish it off by 15th of Jan.
So, in other words, you are in a position to finish it off. It's just because, you know, there is a specified gap between the first and the second doses that you can't do that.
Exactly. Right. But otherwise,
but that's just a matter of a few weeks, right? Either way, it's just a matter of a few weeks.
It's a difference between January or April beginning. So that is the gap really that we are really facing. And if we can reduce it to 4 to 5 weeks, 15th to 20th January is the date we can finish off 100% for the second dose, and Mumbai will be largely protected. Again, it's very crucial because from here, you've got a lot of interaction with Pune, Navi Mumbai, Thane, the entire MMR region, PMR region. A lot of businesses, a lot of corporate sector will be protected in that sense to be fully vaccinated.
Yeah. What are your views on pediatric vaccination?
Like I said, you know, for me, it's very easy to give my views, but I wouldn't want it to be headlines or, you know, running as a scroll saying Aditya Thackeray says that, because finally, we are not men of science. You know, we need to depend on men of science. And I believe the ICMR has started certain trials of the pediatric vaccination, but I hope that there is certain vaccination that comes out very soon for the children, because I've seen parents, I've seen children who want to send their, you know, boys to school, they want to send their girls and boys to school. And there's a dichotomy between, you know, or rather little fear of sending and not sending, because not sending is really affecting the social growth of the kids. But if you send, there's also the risk of COVID. So that really nuance we have to gap with vaccination or any other protection that we can accord to the children.
All right, Aditya Thackeray, always wonderful speaking to you. And I think the big takeaway for me is that in a finite period of time by January, if that gap is reduced between vaccine doses, you'll have 100 and 100. 100 first doses, 100% second doses. The first metro, I believe, in Delhi, in India, which would actually have 100% coverage for vaccines. That's incredible. But once it does happen, it'll protect us to a great extent. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
In all of this, the big question that really needs to be asked is just how transmissible is Omicron? That's the latest variant of COVID. The bigger question is there a direct link at this juncture between greater transmissibility and increased hospitalization or increased fatality? We have a wonderful guest with us. Professor Salim Abdul Karim is a key member of the African COVID Task Force Committee and somebody who has written passionately about how South Africa shouldn't be, in a sense, targeted in quite this manner. It's unfair for actually bringing to the world the reality of Omicron. It's perhaps too early to do anything of the sort. But my first question, Professor, is this. In the last couple of days, what is the link that we are seeing between increased hospitalization and increased transmissibility of Omicron?
Good day to you. It's a great pleasure to be here. When we look at Omicron, what we see is a very large number of mutations. And in particular, Omicron has mutations that overlap with all the four past variants of concern. So it has mutations that are common with Alpha, Beta, Gamma, and Delta. So it's got increased transmissibility from some of the mutations in Delta, increased immune escape from some of the mutations in Beta. Now, we don't yet have clinical data or laboratory data about how the virus is going to behave. We've only known about the virus for about a week. But what we can say, based on the mutations, we know that this virus will have increased transmissibility. It'll have some level of immune escape. But it's very likely that it should not have a very different clinical presentations, because generally viruses evolve to becoming less severe. And it seems right now from our data that the diagnostics and the prevention measures remain effective. I think from the point of view of what we're observing clinically, one must be very careful in interpreting anecdotal and very preliminary data. And the reason for that is very simple. When you get COVID, the severe forms of COVID only manifest in week 2, week 3, week 4. So if you look very early, all you will see is mild cases. So I think at this point, I would not make too much of the reports, the anecdotal reports that we are getting, except to say that what we're hearing is that for most of our clinicians is that the presentation is similar to the previous variants, and the increase in hospitalizations is largely due to the rapid increase in cases. In other words, the rapid spread means more pressure on hospitals quickly.
I take your point about the problems of relying on anecdotal information and the absence of enough data. But indulge us for a moment, because there is so much curiosity. You've been speaking to so many doctors. Are they, for example, seeing respiratory distress among those who have been confirmed as Omicron cases? Are they seeing any other severe symptoms among those who have been detected? What are they seeing?
So when we look at our cases, we firstly are not sure about whether all of them are Omicron in our hospitals because we still have substantial circulation of Delta. But what we are seeing at this stage is that among the first batch that were analyzed, that's about the first 200-300 cases that we were aware of, the data from those showed that the patients presenting were largely younger, and they were presenting with mild infections. So they were seen largely by general practitioners in the private sector. We have not yet received any reports of deaths from Omicron infection. And we know that we are seeing hospitalizations now, and the respiratory distress that we are seeing is very similar to what we've seen before. We get progressive hypoxia requiring oxygen, and, you know, we just manage them in terms of standard protocols with dexamethasone and so on.
Okay. So, Doctor, I'm just trying to sort of understand a little bit more. The 200-300 cases that you're talking about who've been positively sequenced as Omicron, were they vaccinated?
Ah, we don't know that. And we'd all like to know, you know, does it escape vaccine immunity? And the answer to that is no, we don't know. You're not going to be able to answer those questions.
No, but Doctor, that's something I don't understand. Why in South Africa, which has done quite well, are you unable to know if they are vaccinated or not? Is it not centrally registered?
No, it is centrally registered, but you know what it takes to collect that data.
No, I don't. In India, it's and you know, I mean, we've had lots of problems, but we have a wonderful system called COWIN. You know, you access it online. Doctors can do that. The government can do that. The batch number, the date number, the name of the doctor. You know exactly when you've got your doses. You don't have something like that, and this is important data, isn't it? To know if people
absolutely
have been vaccinated.
No, it's very, very important data, and it's being collected. It's just not available for this interview today.
Got it. The 200-300 cases that you're talking about, when were they detected with Omicron? A week back?
So most of them, so our initial cases come from around the second week of November. The earliest known case that we have was the 9th of November. It was identified serendipitously by the technician in the lab that saw that a group of samples that came from a small outbreak at one of our universities, that those particular samples had in a particular PCR kit developed by a company called Thermo Fisher, in that kit, one of the three genes does not turn up positive. So when this technician observed that, that's how we identified this case. So by then, we probably have had, you know, substantial transmission of the virus because, you can't pick up the first case. You'll pick it up only when there's enough cases.
A final question to you, Professor. Existing RT-PCR tests can be used if they are used with some knowledge in identifying or getting a marker for Omicron even before genetic sequencing, right? For the layperson, how easy is it to train somebody to look for the right thing? Could you share some thoughts on that?
Yes, actually, that's one of the factors about Omicron that makes it a little bit easier to study, in that on a standard PCR test that's made by this company, that on just their tests, they use three genes. And one of those genes is the S gene or the spike gene. And Omicron, like the Alpha variant, this particular Omicron variant does not turn up positive on the S gene. Okay. The scientific terminology that we use is that it's an S gene target failure. Mm-hmm. In other words, it fails to light up it fails to produce a positive result on the S gene. So when we look at S gene target failure, we're getting some idea of where we are seeing Omicron. Now, the problem is we don't use this particular kit very often.
I see.
It's only used in a few different labs because our preference has been to use, Roche and Abbott and so on. So where we are using this kit, we are able to get some idea of the extent to which Delta variant versus Omicron variant is spreading. And right. That data I don't have available at this time.
It's a real battle, isn't it, Professor, for all of us all over the world? But it's so interesting to hear your thoughts about this. And let's do another interview in a couple of weeks when we've got more data. Your thoughts would be
absolutely
very, very important. It's been wonderful speaking to you. Thank you very much indeed, sir.
A great pleasure. Thank you.
Well, one of the concerns for those looking to come into India, particularly if you are from an at-risk nation, that's a list of all European countries, the United Kingdom and a few other countries, is that when you enter, you have to do an RT-PCR test. And that RT-PCR test needs to be cleared, which could take several hours, and then you can leave the airport. That's the Government of India rule right now. Palak Jain is a student who was in Edinburgh, traveled to India, and was among those who was at an airport, among the first passengers to actually come in when the new rules actually came into play. Palak, thank you so much for being with us. How difficult was it for you? How long did it take at Delhi airport?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
All right. Actually, my flight landed at 11 a.m. in the morning, and I ended up leaving the airport at 4 p.m. So that was 5 hours at the Delhi airport. And apparently I was luckier than most others because I've heard people who stayed for like 8 hours or 10 hours or, even the whole day. And I was also lucky in the sense that I didn't have a connecting flight. So I knew loads of people who only had a layover in Delhi for a couple of hours, and all of them ended up missing their connecting flights. So that way was easier on me.
Sure.
But
Palak, tell me one thing. The line, the queue to get the RT-PCR test or the fast PCR test, this, rapid PCR test, how long was the line? How big was the queue? Was it a combined queue?
Yeah, it was a combined queue. So another issue I faced was that when I was filling the Air Sugatha form, I only got an option to give the RT-PCR test on the internet. They said that I can book the test prior to my arrival at the Delhi airport, but the only option I saw on the net was RT-PCR. But when I landed at the airport, they said that I can also give the rapid test.
Right.
And the RT-PCR was 500 rupees, and that needed us to wait for 6 hours at the airport.
Right.
However, the rapid test would come within 2 hours, but it was significantly more expensive. It was around 4,000. So,
how long did you wait in line for the test?
Around an hour or so.
So it was. So there were lots of people ahead of you. So it's about 1 hour for the test result. 1 hour perhaps in queue. A minimum of 2-2.5 hours, right? In a best case scenario.
Yeah, best case scenario, and the line was very, very long, very, very long. And when I first joined the line, I couldn't even see where the tests are happening, where the bookings are happening. Like, was out of my sight. And it was a combined line for both people who were giving RT-PCR and people who were giving rapid.
Right. And so eventually, how long did it take for you to get out of the airport? Because you had to clear customs and immigration as well after that.
Yes. Customs and immigration happened within an hour. So, I think 3-4 hours was just taken by the COVID testing.
Right. Well, and was there social distancing when you were waiting? Because that's the big worry, isn't it?
Yeah. Everyone was wearing masks, but no, there was no social distancing in the sense that there were no masks on the floor and everyone was kind of crammed together.
So that's a bit of a concern. And thanks for highlighting that. I'm sure there are people watching this program who could perhaps make that a bit better. But you're back home. Congratulations. Yes. Thanks very much for sharing ordeal with us. We've got a couple of questions which have come in on Ku. Shivangi writes in, don't you think it is our responsibility to follow the guidelines and avoid going out as much as possible? Absolutely. Sharmaji says it is time to follow all the guidelines and secure our lives. Life is a first priority for everyone. out of time on this program. It's time for this short break.